very welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Inside Education is the weekly programme and podcast for anyone interested in teaching, learning or any aspect of education. You can listen to or download hundreds of podcasts of previous episodes at seandelaney.com/podcasts. Today on the programme, I speak to a teacher who uses social media to share ideas, resources, laughs and inspiration with teachers all over Ireland and further afield. She runs a blog, Facebook pages and an Instagram account under the name Irish Primary Teacher. Her blog is one of the most popular Irish education blogs. She has almost 24,000 followers on Facebook and close to 10,000 on Instagram. Student teachers and newly qualified teachers draw on her ideas and ask her questions to help them teach. I wanted to find out more about the teacher behind the website, and so I met up with Niamh Dunphy. I began our conversation by asking Niamh when she set up Irish Primary Teacher.
It was about 4.5 years ago at this stage. I was teaching in Brighton in the UK, and just kind of came to me, I might set up a blog and kind of keep track of ideas and things like that. When I kind of thought about the idea then, after about a day or so, I thought, what am I doing? This is crazy. And I did it anyway. And it was great to kind of keep good ideas kind of in a set place that I knew where to go. And, as I was teaching in England, there was different methodologies, different things being used, different subjects even, than there had been in Ireland. So I knew I was moving back home and I still wanted to keep some of those ideas kind of fresh in my own mind. Which is kind of why I set it up. And then I never expected it to grow. I remember getting my first maybe 100 views and being absolutely delighted, and then set up a Facebook page. And, you know, within the last 4 years, it's grown to over 20,000, which still to this day, I kind of shocked by. And then I suppose it's just continued to grow over the last four and a half years. And hopefully it will continue as well.
How important was it that you were teaching in England to the starting of the blog and the website?
I don't think that it was massively important. It just kind of happened that I was in England, and it was just something a bit different than what I had been used to. Then, like, I trained in Mary Eye, and I taught in Ireland here for 2 years. But teaching in England was a different experience, and there was just a lot of different things that I wanted to keep track of, and some things that I kind of wanted to talk about because my experience in England wasn't very positive. I met some amazing teachers from all around the world who had different ways of doing things, and, you know, they really inspired me. So I really wanted to keep track of those kind of ideas. And then there was a couple of people in Ireland, like Seomra Ranga, for example, and Seo.net, who I was kind of, I really admired them and thought, oh, maybe there's a kind of another space here for another blog. So that's kind of where it started from.
And you said it wasn't a terribly happy experience teaching in England.
No, definitely not. I had qualified in 2011, had a tough time, I suppose, getting a job in Ireland. I got a part-time resource position, which was fantastic. And then that ended up being, I actually changed schools and got another resource position, and then ended up with a temporary mainstream position and got my dip done. And then we moved to England, and I started off in a school that was in the requires improvement category, according to Ofsted. Basically, I had gone for an interview on, say, a Tuesday, and the school had an Ofsted inspection on the Wednesday and Thursday. So when I had applied for the job and got the position, I had no idea, you know, with the kind of trouble that the school was in. The principal was really, really hard on everybody. Nobody went to the staff room. There was just a horrible atmosphere, really, really tense atmosphere. I never actually signed a contract in the role, so I was able to leave and left there kind of around just before Christmas. But it was a really, really tough time in teaching, and I was constantly doubting everything that I was doing because everything was critiqued. Even the clothes that I was wearing were an issue, you know.
And was that an issue for the principal or for the children?
For the principal, yeah. Like, the children were had a really lovely bunch, but they had two teachers at that stage, and by the end of the year, even though I left at Christmas, I think they ended up having 5 or 6 teachers that year, because the school was really in a bad place and the support network was there was nothing there really. I know since then the principal of the school has left or was fired, I think, and the turnover of staff has been massive. You know, none of, maybe two teachers that were there originally are still there and everybody else is gone. And then secondly, I moved on, then I kind of did some subbing, and it was great in the UK because you literally gave your name to an agency and you got a job, or you got a couple of weeks or a day here or there. Like, you could kind of have whatever you wanted. So I was offered then about 6 weeks in another school, which again, unfortunately, was a requires improvement school. Now, this was a different experience. They had gotten a new head teacher in who was incredible. Like, I've never met somebody as enthusiastic and vibrant and mad as he was. He was a fantastic leader. So that was a different experience altogether. Like, he had a giant sized T-Rex in his office. So he was that kind of a character. And it was a much different experience for me.
And what was it about his leadership that was so good for you as a fairly newly qualified teacher at the time?
He was just really open. He was honest. He kind of would come into your room and kind of ask you how things were. And he just kind of listened to what you had to say. He supported you with whatever it is that you needed. We also had a team of assistant head teachers who were brilliant as well. And they, you know, I remember having a number of children with quite difficult special educational needs, but I had such a great team around me. It made it just a little bit easier. But when the 6 weeks were up there, I had already applied for a more permanent position elsewhere. So I decided to move on, which was probably a big mistake, but I kind of had committed at that stage and ended up in a school that was extremely disadvantaged. That school, again, was a kind of third different experience. I learned a lot during my teaching there. We had much smaller classes, and the support, again, there was, it was actually deemed good in the Ofsted report. But the teachers there, like, it was completely different. There was, you know, there wasn't such a huge expectation on planning and things like that, because to get through the day was an achievement. And often one of the head teachers would come down with a bottle of wine and chocolates at the end of a day to kind of say, you know, fair play, you got through it. But that was a very different experience. And that's kind of where I started with kind of going out for tea and coffee and cake with a few colleagues, which is something that I now do with friends and from my current school, which is something that, you know, really kind of helps on a weekly basis. But yeah, that was another different experience. And then we ended up moving back home to Ireland. So, yeah.
And before you started working on the website, did you have a good IT skills, or did you have good knowledge about how to put a website together yourself?
Not a clue. I started off with a Blogspot blog, which was very easy. There was nothing really to it. Other than that, my IT skills would be good in terms of I can do PowerPoint and Word, and I kind of would have a good idea of a few different programs. I would be a quick learner. I then decided to change to a WordPress blog. I did delete the whole website one time.
Did you lose it?
Yeah, I lost absolutely everything on it. It was an absolute disaster because I had been on a friend's hosting and he forgot to pay it. And like he was going to pay it, but I decided, no, I'll get my own. And yeah, every single thing was deleted. Thankfully, we were able to get the cached versions of a few things, but basically this website had to be built up from scratch. That was an interesting and very stressful summer. I think that was about 2 years ago. Yeah.
And you've said that when you started it off, it was kind of as a way for you to remember things you had done and to keep track of things you had done. What would you say are the goals of the website and the social media parts of your work today?
I think the primary goal is, and always has been really for me, that it is a place for me to kind of even reflect and think back on, you know, how something went. Or, you know, at the moment I'm looking at literacy on a weekly basis and thinking, okay, how can I best support the children in my class in terms of reading and writing and oral language and spelling and grammar and everything else that's kind of in the literacy curriculum? And to kind of sit down and actually write a blog post kind of focuses me. And that's just one example. But I suppose really now it has become such a large thing and a huge part of my life that I really hope that it does help fellow teachers and makes their lives a little bit easier. there is kind of nowhere for teachers to go to ask a question, that in kind of a supportive environment, that it's kind of an anonymous thing. Like there's some forums and, you know, you can contact the INTO or you can contact different people, but it's much easier to log on to Facebook and send a quick message to someone that's you don't know, or to go onto Instagram and ask a question. So at the moment, I kind of run a question session on my Instagram on a Friday evening. And usually I'm getting about 100 to 200 questions from teachers. And then I just kind of keep all those in a highlight on the Instagram so that other people can go back and look at it. I suppose that's basically it, to kind of help anyone that I can, when I can. Yeah.
So is it very much influenced then by the class level that you are currently teaching?
Mostly it is. I kind of use a lot of what I'm doing in my own classroom. Like I do teach in a senior school, so I would often pop down to friends' classrooms and say, "Oh, what are you up to, and how's that going?" Or, you know, I've great colleagues and who are more than happy to share what they're up to as well. And I would kind of share things then from fellow bloggers that, you know, might be in infants or might be in first or second class. So I kind of have a mix of everything, but primarily what I'm doing in my classroom is fifth class focus this year.
And when you say you sit down to write a blog post, one of the things I love about your blog posts is that they're so concise. You know, there's no rambling, and it's like as if you do an awful lot of editing to get them so clear and so specific. How long does it take you to write them?
To be honest, personally, I am a very to-the-point kind of person. I don't really put in all the fluff. It's never really there. Now, at the same time, there's usually probably 15 to 20 edits on a blog post. And, you know, I take out words or I change around little things, or I kind of worried about how something sounds. And I don't want to sound like I know it all, because I certainly don't know it all. But yeah, it wouldn't take a huge amount of time to write one, particularly about things that I would be very confident in. At the moment, the literacy one, I started that last weekend. I'm still kind of dipping in and out of it. I'm kind of testing it out in my own classroom and seeing if it actually works, and then I'll put it up. But usually it could take about a week to get a blog post up to the standard that I wanted at.
But it's also influenced by the fact that you are able to ground what you're saying in your own practice, because you're doing these things in class.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like I only really talk about things that I'm confident enough to talk about, because I don't want to kind of come across like I don't want to come across like I know everything, because as I said, I don't. But I don't want to mislead people or give incorrect information that, like, I couldn't really talk about infant classrooms because my experience is pretty much none. And I don't think it would be fair for me to, you know, preach about it or even write a blog post. There might be a couple of ideas that I could share, but mostly I leave that to other bloggers. So mostly my own experience has been in special education and also kind of in a more senior end. Now, if I was to move to infants, then I would explore that slowly. But at the moment, it's kind of where I'm at, yeah.
And just relating to one of your most recent Instagram posts, have the children in your class learned the counties of Ireland yet?
Yeah, they were actually very good. I'll thank last year's teacher for that. They actually knew the counties. They were able to list most of them. And we're using the Counties of Ireland poem now. So that kind of keeps them going. And they enjoy poetry and they enjoy the kind of learning it off. They actually really like facts. And so I kind of try and add a few games and different things in as well to kind of keep them interested. But it's a great kind of competition or a challenge, like how many can you list on your whiteboard in a minute? And I kind of gave them a time limit of about 2 minutes, and they kind of worked together, and they loved that, the challenge and the, oh, they're after getting 17, I have only 10, and oh God, quick, you know, get it down quickly. So that was great.
And how do you decide what to share then and what not to share in your teaching?
Mostly it's what I'm doing on a daily basis. There has been a number of blog posts that I've written that I have, as far as I'm concerned, they're pretty grand to put up, and I then don't, because I'm worried about the reaction that they might have. And then there's sometimes that I think, well, actually, that does need to be said. Like there was, you know, pictures of children being put up online, and I kind of felt that wasn't really appropriate. And personally, I just, with the new GDPR and everything, I just wouldn't recommend it. So I did just put up a quick message just to say, look, be careful, because you don't want, like, if I had a child and their picture was up on a teaching blog, I certainly wouldn't be happy about it. And I know there'd be a lot of parents like that too. But it's kind of a mix. You know, there's some things that I put up are very popular. You know, a colleague today dressed up as Miss Trunchbull, and, you know, that post was widely appreciated by teachers all around Ireland and elsewhere as well. And then sometimes I put up things and nobody really cares. So it's just kind of a mixture of what I like to put up and what I know my followers will enjoy as well.
And your audience, obviously it's mainly primary teachers, but how much do you know about them in terms of, you know, how many are in Ireland, how many are abroad, what stages of their careers are they at? Or, you know, what do you know about your audience?
Instagram and Facebook kind of allow me to see where most of my audience is from. So the majority is Irish primary teachers, and kind of the age profile is probably from, you know, people that are finished their Leaving Cert and are going on to college, up to about 35. Now I would have followers that are a bit older and more experienced teachers, who kind of follow to get a new idea or just to see something from a different perspective. But most of my followers would be either kind of teachers that are beginning their career, newly qualified teachers, and then kind of teachers in the maybe less than 10 years. Now, I do have loads of followers that are outside those brackets, but the majority would be there.
And how do you decide what to put on Instagram, what to put on Facebook, and what to put on the website? Is there a juggling act there, or do you, you know, kind of, is there a lot of duplication? How do you manage that? Because it's a lot to be uploading to one, never mind three of them.
I try not to duplicate, because I know any other blogs that I follow that would drive me mad. So I try to kind of mostly put pictures up on Instagram. I've kind of started doing a little bit of talking, but that I usually have to listen back about 50 times and then probably don't go ahead with it. And then Facebook is usually blog posts. So I share the blog posts that I write for the blog on Facebook. At the moment, I'm trying to get to 10,000 on Instagram so I can have a swipe up feature and then I can share the blog post there. But it's not possible until you have the 10,000. So with Facebook, then it's mostly the blog posts, and then occasionally it will be, you know, I share things from other bloggers, other profiles, and just some ideas, or if I kind of have something more wordy to say, they go on Facebook, because Instagram doesn't really give you that space to do. So Instagram is really kind of a quick glance, and oh, that's a nice art, or that's a nice bit of maths, oh, I wonder what happened here with, you know, when I was doing place value last week, for example, I will write a full blog post on place value and what I would do, whereas on the Instagram I just had a picture of a whiteboard with, you know, what we did that day in class. So it's just, I might do the same topic but kind of chop and change it, and a bit here and a bit there.
So for any listeners to this who might be able to help you build up that number of followers on Instagram to 10,000, if someone to say doesn't use Instagram at the moment, or, you know, how would you encourage them to get started? Like, why should they use Instagram, and how do they go about doing it?
Personally, I love Instagram. I just find it's such a quick and easy way to get new ideas. I follow loads of American teachers you know, who are so enthusiastic and so brilliant. Their classrooms are incredible. And it's just great to just see different ideas from around the globe. The community on Instagram is amazing as well. Like, I've met so many people through Instagram, Irish primary teachers. There's hundreds of us now there. And there is just such a supportive community. Now, what I would recommend, if anyone, a lot of people would have a personal Instagram and then they follow teaching accounts, and suddenly their feed is bombarded with teaching stuff, which is not really what, you know, if you want to switch off and all you're seeing is teaching, it's not great. So I have my own, like, obviously the Irish primary teacher Instagram, and then I have my personal one, and I would recommend to anyone that is a primary school teacher to set up a teaching account, even if it's just, you know, their name and they don't even post anything on it, but they just have somewhere kind of extra to go. So you can download the app, the Instagram app, and it's as easy as giving an email address and password and off you go.
Can you say something about the interactions then you have with teachers? Because, I mean, you've talked about meeting teachers through Instagram, and I'm sure you probably meet some through Facebook as well. What kind of interaction do you get from the different platforms?
I think at the moment Instagram is probably the where I get the most interaction. With the questions feature on Instagram, I kind of use that on a Friday evening. As I said, I probably get about 100 different teachers that are just looking for a bit of advice or even a bit of encouragement, or I did this, is this the right thing to do, kind of questions. So usually it's very, very positive interactions. And then I suppose through with other bloggers, it's extremely positive, and we kind of share each other's ideas, and we kind of say, oh, I really like that, and, you know, well done, or things like that, you know, just kind of encouraging one another as well. It's just really a supportive environment. Like last night, I really wanted a new printer. I have never had a colour printer other than when I was doing teaching practice, and I really wanted something good that was going to last and also not cost me the earth with ink costs. So I just put a quick question, and I'd say I got about 50 responses with different ideas, and like for that it's just incredible. And if somebody ever has a question about anything really, you know, I do try and put it up for them, and usually, you know, there'll be loads and loads of responses, just people helping one another.
And Instagram is the best for that, for the responses.
Yeah, it probably is at the moment. There's also Irish Primary Teacher, my own Facebook page, and then there's an Irish Primary Teachers group page. Myself and one of my friends are the admin on that as well. So that's kind of the best place to ask if you want direct responses from different teachers. And then obviously on Instagram, my own personal Instagram and Facebook, I answer the questions myself mostly, because otherwise my inbox gets too full, and it's very difficult to kind of share other people's ideas. But I think teachers in general work brilliantly collaboratively, and, you know, I know for a fact my own colleagues, if you say, you know, I'm really struggling with a certain thing, or a child in my class is really struggling with a concept in maths or a literacy thing, and, you know, just saying it, suddenly you have 50 new ideas and you have loads of different things to try out. So I think Instagram really does give that to teachers from all over Ireland, not just within your own school.
What kind of posts get the best responses from teachers?
Usually practical things, like they could be art ideas, or if, for example, in maths, if there's a difficult concept to try to explain, and I kind of do step-by-step guides of how I go about it, that seems to go down very, very well with people. As well as that, then kind of literacy ideas or display ideas are again very popular. You know, I think going into a classroom it's a blank canvas when you go in September, and it can be a bit terrifying to know where to even start. Like, we know we don't learn in college how to put up backing paper, which is an absolute nightmare. And just kind of little tips and tricks on how to decorate the classroom to kind of make it colourful and appealing to children. Those are kind of the little tips that are very popular amongst my followers.
One of the consequences and maybe the downsides of having a popular social media presence is that there can be negative comments or trolling comments. Do you have much of a problem with that? And if so, how do you deal with them?
Sometimes people can be a little bit mean on social media. A fellow blogger who I got on really, really well with, and, you know, we've become friends through our blogs, I often might screenshot something and send it to her, or she does it back to me, and it's kind of our way of kind of going, am I overreacting? Is this actually an issue? And sometimes, because it's all online and you don't know people, the way I might read it might not be the way that it was intended. Now, usually if there's something that's incredibly negative or mean, I just block and delete, because I there's no point in me engaging with people, and realistically I just don't have the time to be spending hours arguing with somebody over the internet. So I just block and delete is kind of my policy of just forgetting about it. I would be quite a sensitive person, so I kind of have to be mindful that I just need to let it go and just forget about it. It's not worth it.
And how much time do you spend doing all the uploading every week?
Too much. It really depends on the time of year. Like, the summer was quite busy, because especially in August, coming back into school mode. And I suppose for me, over the summer, I kind of updated different sections of the blog, and just to make it a bit more user friendly. Like, I know where everything is, I can find it very easily. But for somebody that isn't used to the blog or has only heard of the blog, they find it much more tricky. Then I suppose with Instagram and Facebook, Instagram, if I'm just putting up posts, it only takes maybe 3 or 4 minutes to put up a post and write a quick kind of overview of it. If I'm answering questions like Friday evenings, it could be 2 or 3 hours of work on that. And then I suppose for the blog posts, depending what it is about, it's usually about a week and probably about 3 or 4 hours per blog post. Now, some of them can be a 30-minute job, and others then can take much longer.
So that's a lot of, a big commitment.
Yeah, it is, but I really enjoy it. Like, it's a massive hobby, and I get a lot out of it for, you know, personally, in terms of, you know, someone coming back and saying, oh, that tip you gave me, you know, I actually used that in an interview and I got the job. And, or I was really struggling with a child in my class was really, you know, couldn't do a particular task, or were finding something really, really tricky. And, you know, you said to do this and I did it, and that really helped that child. So kind of getting messages saying, you know, thanks so much, or, you know, I was really stressed, but I tried this and it really helped. Like, I just find that absolutely brilliant, and I'm delighted to help anyone that I can.
Because I should say, it's one of the things you have on the website is possible interview questions and the answers that you would give to them.
Yeah, that was that's actually a very popular post. And even the interview questions, again, it's something that we don't really do much of in college. And then suddenly you're faced with three very experienced people that are asking you questions that you don't really know the answers to, or you know the right answer, but you don't really know how to answer it and how to do it justice. And then you kind of, I know myself, when I came out of my first couple of interviews being so disappointed that I didn't say all these things and being absolutely terrified. And I just find, you know, brainstorming a few ideas really does help. And just to have a vague idea of what you should say. Obviously, you shouldn't learn it off because it does come across like you're a robot. But other than that, I think just to give people an idea of where to even start and kind of what's to be expected, that's why I think they're helpful.
And those questions and answers and many more resources for teachers are available on irishprimaryteacher.ie. I'll bring you the second part of my interview with Niamh Dunphy, also known as Irish Primary Teacher, on next week's programme. But that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen back to this programme or hundreds of others on seandelaney.com/podcasts. My book, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which is published by Routledge, is available from all good bookshops, or you can order it at your local library. Until the same time next week, that's it from me, Sean Delaney. Thank you for listening.